Blog Talk Radio.
Joining us tonight on the Wise Women Media, the radio show. We have a lot to talk about tonight. There's so much news going on, and so much of it is not covered by the mainstream media, and we keep getting the normal propaganda, disinformation. But I want to just do a couple of announcements. You can find us online at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. Links to our social networks on Facebook and on Twitter. If you do Facebook searches for Wise Women Media, you'll find our group and our Facebook page. We're tweeting under Wise Women Media. We also have a Tumblr, wisewomenmedia.tumblr.com. On our website at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com, you'll see a list of our sponsors. We want to give a big shout out to Here Be Monsters, which gives us this time slot every week, and also to the Commons Project Network, which we fall under, and that provides a whole stable of shows on so many different topics. There's the Sunday show, Spirit Therapy Radio, the Consciousness Shift, I can't forget that. I can't also forget Rick Spizak's great show, New Mercury Media, Progressive News Network. You can find that if you do a search. And on the Common Projects Network, we have the Authority Smashing Hour, which is a radical report, the Pinko the Bear show, Stuart Acuff with the election boycott, so many different shows that take place every week. So check the schedule, check the websites, and almost every night of the week there's a show for you. Also, we have a guest right away, right out the box. She is actually putting together an event I'll let her tell you all about it.
Yes, Katie, thank you.
Can you hear me? Are
yes,
you on
I'm
the
here.
Line with me?
Okay,
yes, I'm great.
Here.
Tell a little bit about yourself and about the event that you're putting together.
Well, what this is it's a 3-day, it started out as one day annually, and it sprang off of the Occupy Wall Street movement. We have a 3-day music festival, which we feature local and regional bands. We have speakers on different topics of social justice issues. We offer workshops, free workshops on different things like sustainable living, holistic healing, different things like that. And we're very big about promoting local community. We don't allow any chain businesses to sponsor or vend at the event at all.
And where, tell us where this is taking place and how people can get more information about it.
Okay. Yeah, this happens in southern Indiana. We get a lot of people from the Louisville area, Indianapolis, Kentucky, over in southern Illinois. And it's also a food drive. So people, when they come in, they make a donation of, last year it was, $5 a day. You can camp if you want for a little bit more, and they also bring canned goods. We have a website that is in progress, but our main thing is the Facebook page. It's OccuStock, OccuStock, and Feed the People is the event. And this year for 2014, we raised $1,700 cash, and we also collected 900 pounds of food for the Tri-State Food Bank here.
So this is taking place in Linville, Indiana, is that correct?
Yes.
Do you have a vision for this kind of event spreading everywhere else, which, looking at it, it's such a great event. Is this something that people, there's no set organization, so people from just about everywhere could put one of these together if they were so inclined?
Absolutely, they could. I kind of like to think of it as the activist music festival. We had people travel from as far as Texas and Mississippi to come this year. It's really great to have so many like-minded people together that, want to try to get together and have fun and feel the community closeness and then also try to change the world.
Right,
so I would love for it to take off.
Yes. Oh, I think that's a marvelous idea. How many of these have you actually done now so far?
We have had 3 so far. 2 in Linville. The first year we were up in Edinburgh, closer to Indianapolis. Sprang kind of off of the Occupy Indianapolis group there that we had started, and we're really excited. It's really taking off. We more than doubled our attendance and our collections from 2013 to 2014, and we're completely nonprofit. So we haven't had money to spend on advertising. It's all in word of mouth. I think it's going great.
Have you filed a 501c3 for this event, or is this something you'd like to out of?
Let me add that. We actually, our fiscal sponsor is Alliance for Global Justice, which is the same organization that supports the Occupy Wall Street movement, and that does grant us the 501c3 status. We are ran entirely on donations and volunteers. Nobody gets paid. So if anyone would like to make a donation, it is completely tax deductible, and it can be accepted through PayPal to OcuStockInfo@gmail.com.
Oh, that is great. Are there any, do you have any tips or tricks on how somebody could get one of these going in their own community?
You know, I think you just have to have the motivation to want to do it. My theory the whole time has kind of been, you know, if we build it, they will come, and they've been coming. I think there's a big interest, and we're in, you know, Southern Indiana is not, it's not the most progressive and open-minded place in the nation, and to find out that there's so many people that are, you know, willing and interested to participate in something like this is really a wonderful thing. We started this a small group of like 4 people.
Right.
I think anybody wants to make it happen can make it happen.
And as long as they're putting together, maybe, you know, I guess that would be individual choice if they wanted to put it under the umbrella of another 501c3 or actually form their own 501c3.
Sure.
So that could work just about anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what is your vision for this event? Do you expect it to get bigger as time goes by if you keep doing more of these?
I really do. It seems like, you know, the distance as people traveled to come this year and some of the people that have heard about it that you just might not have expected to, I think word is really getting out there. I do expect it to grow. Like I said, we more than doubled in size last year, and we had about 500 people there compared to, you know, less than 200 the year before. So
we're
hoping to hit, you know, close to maybe 1,000 attendees this year, and that would be amazing. We would love to feed more people. That's, you know, the goal. We're also starting to work on some different kind of side projects and create some public gardens. With the nonprofit, we are looking into our options to obtain some vacant lots, turn them into places where anybody in the community that may not have access or finances to get fresh produce can just, you know, walk into the lot down the block and grab some food.
Yeah, that they've done some amazing things with urban gardens about everywhere. And that's really becoming so important, especially in the cities where you really have, like, it's almost like a food desert. You can't get anything fresh when you're in a lot of these urban areas. You can't get fresh apples. You can't get anything that's not, you know, GMO, genetically modified. So,
and that's our goal to grow at that concept of feed the people is kind of make it a more year-round to help feed people.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about Occupy, we could probably talk a little bit about that, but I want to let our caller or our listeners know that we are taking calls. If you have any questions, you can call in at 213-816-0357, and also our chat room is open, so if you have your Blog Talk Radio page open and you don't see the chat room, just refresh your page. And the chat room should open up for you at that point right on your browser, right on your page. So if you feel like you want to ask a question but you don't want to get on the air, you can type it right in the chat box and I'll read the question on the air. How did this actually evolve from the Occupy movement? And why do you have any reasons as to why you think the Occupy movement kind of fizzled out, or do you think it's just dormant, waiting to come alive again? Give me some of your thoughts.
A lot of people say that it's dead, you know, that it's over. I would just have to really disagree with that. Obviously it doesn't have the momentum that it did before, but there are still so many good things going on in a lot of cities. I mean, Jackson, Mississippi still has an active Occupy group. I mean, it's still out there. And I think one of the most important things that the Occupy movement did was brought a lot of us together to join forces, to start our own, you know, our own special interest projects, you know, like to feed the people and people that are doing other things. I think it did a lot to do that. I think it got the ball rolling, and something needed to.
Right. I think it began a collective consciousness that, you know, I know for a fact that Occupy really did begin from a majority of these people from two groups, and that was people that had been really screwed on their mortgages and young people that knew they were being screwed with school loans. So when those two groups of people came together, they realized, hey, this is not financial freedom, and this is ball and chain kind of, you know, debt enslavement. And that opened up the collective consciousness of what we can envision and what we can create. You know, we create, we make the change. So I think this is happening now. It's almost like it's evolved full circle, because one of the things that I didn't see the Occupy movement address a lot was race. And now we have the Ferguson movements, which have really mushroomed just over this past week. And now it's, hey, we're shutting down Friday. That's it. We're shutting down Black Friday, and we're going to make this about Ferguson, and we're going to increase people's awareness about what happened in Ferguson. So I see that this is happening in so many cities. In fact, I think there was something like 100 arrests in Los Angeles just a couple of days ago, or towards the beginning of the week after the grand jury announcement. So we're seeing all these changes and people coming together, but the corporate media is really trying to really, I don't want to say the word whitewash, but they're really trying to whitewash.
They don't want people to realize that the power that they can have. You know, people are starting to realize that everything, all of these problems really are connected. You know, and it comes back to, you know, we're owned by corporations. We're ran by corporations. We're not ran by the people anymore. And, you know, I think the more people that realize that, the more probably chaotic it's going to get before it gets better.
Right. I think so many people right now are in denial of that fact, the fact that the system has to come down. It has to crash down before we can build something new and something much better that serves all of us, because
right now,
the government is not serving us. And, you know, I used to think that voting made a difference, and I don't even think that makes a difference anymore. I think it's become a huge distraction. So a huge distraction from the things that we should be focused on. So now we have 2016 looming ahead of us, and to kind of on a different curve here, what do you think is going to happen in 2016? Because I'll give you my thoughts after you give me yours.
You know, I don't know. I don't. I can't even guess anymore. You know, I live in Kentucky. I cannot believe Mitch got reelected. I don't know. It's just going to take so many people to wake up. What I wish would happen is that enough people would stand up and vote third party to make an actual difference.
Right.
But I don't think that's going to happen.
I tend to not think that that's going to happen, simply because these people cannot, the third party people, which I'm with the Greens. I don't try to hide that, but I'm with the Green Party, and for the past 4 years I've been the only elected Green in the state of Florida. But as much as they try to keep us out of the media or keep anything about us out of the consciousness of anybody that's voting, they take our candidates and don't let them debate. They lock our candidates in most places. So I really feel that even spending the money to try to run candidates. In other words, the money can be better spent feeding people. Possibly, I don't think it serves us to run a candidate for president, even though that's what we have to do to maintain ballot access. So it's kind of like
it's not a fair playing ground until they takes all the private money out of there, you know, and
right.
gives each candidate equal opportunity. It's just not, it's not fairly represented for the people.
Right, right. Now, do you, in these events, the OcuStocks, do you get into anything
mm-hmm.
political like that? Do you have any collective circles where people can actually sit in a circle and actually discuss, you know, what they would like to see, what they would like to do, and how they would like to create change?
We do discuss topics. Being a 501c3, we cannot endorse any party or candidate. But we can certainly discuss some of the issues that we might, you know, be in, you know, concerned about. We had Neil Smith with Indiana Normal spoke for us last year, and he'll be returning again to talk about, you know, why do we even have prohibition, you know, and the fact that we have more people incarcerated than any other nation. You know, these are all things, you know, different things like that, and the food deserts, and, you know, why it's important to buy locally, you know, why it's important to support your local economy and not ship things in. March Against Monsanto was there. They had a booth. You know, so we cover a lot of the issues, but we can't endorse any party or candidate.
Do you have a strong March Against Monsanto showing at the OcuStock events?
Yeah, we really do. It works out great because the March weekend is usually, it's the weekend right after the festival. And they 2014 was the first year that they joined us, and it was great. I think they had close to 100 people turn out to march in Evansville, Indiana, which is a very big number for that area. I can tell you from doing Occupy stuff there in protest, that's an excellent turnout, and they'll be back with us again next year. There's a lot of support for them.
Yeah, we have a pretty strong group here in Tampa, and we've been very, very busy, you know, planning
mm-hmm.
events, speakers. We have, you know, several people that are actually great at speaking, going on the radio or speaking to groups about the food supply, about the water supply. It looks like this
mm-hmm.
We're losing the war with Monsanto because they are still continuing to do what they're doing and actually getting away with it, and the government is just turning a blind eye. So it's up to us to talk to other people and talk to groups and talk to everybody we come into contact with about our water and food supply. And people who
Absolutely.
Will do their research will be the people that will come out on top, because we have to pass this information down to our children and our grandchildren. You know, they have to know.
Yes.
So
I take my son out marching with me.
Yeah, and I love that when I see a March Against Monsanto event, you know, with a lot of kids, and the kids are marching
mm-hmm.
and the kids are attending, and they know what it's about. They've been taught at home, and of course, most of those kids are taught to critically think as well. So,
yes.
So what do you think? Why do you think Occupy? We talked about it being dormant, about it actually being
mm-hmm.
there. Why do you think it kind of disappeared from most Americans' radar? Do you think it had something to do with the 2012 elections?
I think between that and the fact that the only coverage that mainstream media really gave was anything negative. It just kind of gave people a bad impression of it. We didn't do too bad here. We were fortunate. We actually had positive media coverage in Evansville on our events and some really good results. But it just kind of, you know, we we had some issues with a political party kind of infiltrating and taking over our group, which lost a lot of our momentum. And I know that a lot of other cities did as well with the election. A lot of groups were basically taken over. And, you know, the people that started them lost them. So I think that probably had a lot to do with it. You know, when you have no leadership, it you know, there's disagreements between people, different things, you know. And a lot of it is a lot of people have gone off to start their own projects, you know, like I do Hockey Stock. I have friends that do Foundation for United Front up in Chicago, which is a nonprofit. You know, I have people, I know friends that are doing a lot of different things, and it's just kind of like they went off into their own area of their specific interest because Occupy was very vast. You know, and a lot of individual projects have taken off from that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just wanted to let our listeners know, if you have a question for Katie about Occupy, OccuStock, this event, give a call at 213-816-0357 or hit us up in the chat room and ask your question there, and I'll read it live on the air. Have you been following anything that's been going on down in Fort Lauderdale regarding the homeless down there?
But getting arrested for feeding them, I wish I could go down there and feed people myself. It makes me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, they have actually put an event together where they will be canceling Christmas. There's supposed to be like a huge event to bring in a lot of the tourists and the snowbirds. They go downtown and, you know, and frequent the local shops in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that are involved in a hunger strike. Jillian Pym and Desiree mm-hmm. Lynn and a few other people have actually joined. Jillian, she was the first one, that are hunger striking until the ban on feeding the homeless, the actual statute ordinance, is either overturned or not enforced anymore. So it looks like some drastic measures have been taken by the people down there, and they're very brave. And this elderly gentleman, this 90-year-old man, keeps getting arrested.
Right.
He runs an organization called Love Thy Neighbor, and it's in memory of his wife, who died like 23 years ago. So, you know, they're just extremely brave people and really band together to get this kind of thing done, to get the people fed. And, you know, they're not afraid to serve time for it. Several of them have been arrested. Anybody who wants to know more about that, check out the blog Homeless Hate Laws. blogs@blogspot.com. Again, that's homelesshatelaws.blogspot.com. And they also have another event coming up. Let me see if I can get the information. Somebody just emailed this before I went on the air. This event, I'm pulling it up. It's November 29th, so it's tomorrow. Mass Action, Stop Criminalizing Homeless Now. And it's going to be tomorrow at 11 a.m., the United States Federal Courthouse at 299 East Broward Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So you can look up that event right on Facebook. If you're on Facebook, just look up Mass Action, Stop Criminalizing Homelessness Now. So, that's the event, and the Canceling Christmas is another separate one, which I'll try to find the link to that. So are there any drastic measures, Katie, where you are, where people are doing this kind of action or something similar to get people fed that are homeless? Because you're up in a cold, cold weather area, and if there's homeless people, they're really suffering.
They are, and I mean, and they're out there. We had a local business owner recently. We are working together to try to kind of figure out what we can do to change this. He has a restaurant in Evansville, Indiana. He wanted to go out one day with, you know, 50 or so lunch packs, find people on the streets and give them lunch. And the health department told him he couldn't do it. That
wow.
It was against the law. So, you know, he wasn't really aware of that. None of us were really aware that we had statutes that existed like that here. So we are looking into that right now because, you know, the majority of homeless people aren't in the shelters.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's great to help those shelters out because, of course, those people need help too. But there's a lot of people just on the streets. You know, take them, you know, when our occupied group was more active, we'd pass out gloves, you know, we'd go around, we'd try to help them, and then to find out, you know, oh, no, you can't go feed these people. That's against the law. It's
for
upsetting.
For anyone
that
wants to know more about this canceled, you can do one of these events in your own communities. So this is something that is really important to anybody out there that wants to, you know, wants to feel like they're helping. You look up Christmas on, this is on Facebook, Christmas is canceled in Fort Lauderdale. Just type that into your Facebook search and it will pull up a community. It's not an event yet, but it's a community. Right now there's almost 300 people on it. And it says Christmas is canceled in Fort Lauderdale. On that same blog, homelesshatelaws.blogspot.com, they do have an entry that was made that's called Christmas is Canceled. And they have a list of the stores that are involved, that are going to be involved with them. Because some of the stores have said, you know, we're going to be involved with you, not with the other people. So I thought that was really amazing that, you know, they stood up the powers that be and said, no, we're going to do the right thing and feed people if they need to be fed or keep them warm. And I don't know about you, but it's cold down here tonight. This is Florida, and we're really, really, when we go down to like 40 or below 40, it's really cold. And there's, you know, these people have nowhere to go because they're, as you said, there's not enough shelters. And it seems like we get an influx of the homeless when it gets really super cold up north, they come down here.
Mm-hmm.
So we end up more down here during the winter months because they know chances are they're not going to freeze to death down here. Where
that's concerning. They're calling for a really cold winter this year, and you know it's and we, you know, while we have all these empty houses sitting around that have been
closed
on.
Give me your impressions on how. You think people will come together in relation to what's happening in Ferguson? How do you think this is opening up people's collective consciousness? Do you think this is winning any hearts and minds?
I think it is to a degree. I think people are hopefully starting to realize that, you know, this isn't just a one incident problem. This is what a police state looks like. And people need to realize that. It's not just in Ferguson. It's not just in, you know, Fort Lauderdale. These are problems that are everywhere. And I think more and more people are starting to become aware of it. I've seen a lot of ugliness from people, too. Racism is still alive in America, and it's sad and it's shameful.
It's amazing how many people that you think are not racist, and then they'll make a racist comment, and then they won't even believe that they themselves are racist, especially when you point it out to them. You know, like you can very, if they make a comment, you can very humbly say, but wait a minute, look at this from the context of what you just said. Don't you think what you just said is a racist comment? And they won't think so. So I'm not. Or you'll hear stuff like, oh, well, I have plenty of friends that are black. Well, you know, I've heard that a million times, but that doesn't mean somebody's not a racist, you know, just because they happen to know a few people. But I'm amazed by what I've heard. I'm amazed at how a lot of activists like yourself and like myself, you know, when the fire started burning, when everything started going to hell the other night in Ferguson, how right away, oh, it's the protesters' fault. And I thought to myself, you know, a lot of this has been contrived from the very beginning.
Right.
And it really scares me that, you know, it scared me that these fires seem to be started from inside the businesses, from inside the businesses.
Yes.
Businesses were boarded up and locked up, but yet the fires were all begun from the inside. And I thought, that's interesting. So, you know, and I know, I think we've walked on the planet long enough to know that when cops do discoveries, they don't always tell the truth
exactly.
when they write up stories in their reports. So there's
I know
a lot
that
of people.
Several,
go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say that the several hundred protesters that I was watching on live stream that whole night were all peaceful. I think maybe one person threw a couple rocks. But, you know, I didn't see anything like that going on. But, you know, they're not going to tell you. These people have been out here over 100 days angry
right.
and peaceful the whole entire time. They deserve an award. They don't, you know, they're not the ones burning down the community. I think it was Huffington Post showed that the locals were trying to protect the businesses.
Right, right. Well, I have some interesting audio that I'd like to play. If you can stay on the line with me, Katie, we can probably finish up the show. But I wanted to play this audio. It was a friend of mine pointed it out to me. I did have some technical difficulties with it earlier, so I'm hoping it will play all the way through. But there were some real crazy stuff. There were really crazy things going on during the grand jury testimony. And this audio talks a little bit about that. So hang on. This is going to run about 10 minutes or so. Okay. Here goes.
Michael Brown, the assistant district attorney handling the case, said this to the grand jurors. I'm going to pass out to you all. You are all going to receive a copy of the statute. It is section 563046, and it says law enforcement officers' use of force in making an arrest, and it is the law on what is permissible, what force is permissible, and when in making an arrest by a police officer. The assistant district attorney, Kathy Elizadeh, then handed the grand jury a copy of a 1979 Missouri law that was ruled unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court in 1985. She was handing them something that had not been law in Missouri during her entire legal career. But it was very helpful to Officer Darren Wilson that the assistant district attorney handed the grand jury an old unconstitutional law which said incorrectly that it is legal to shoot fleeing suspects simply because they are fleeing. By handing the grand jury that unconstitutional law, the assistant district attorney dramatically lowered the standard by which Darren Wilson could be judged. She was telling the grand jury with that document that Darren Wilson had the right, the legal right, to shoot and kill Michael Brown as soon as Michael Brown started running away from him. She was telling the grand jury that Darren Wilson didn't have to feel his life threatened at all by Michael Brown. She was taking the hurdle that Darren Wilson had to get over in his testimony and flattening it. She was making it impossible for Darren Wilson to fail in front of this grand jury. She was doing all of that by handing the grand jury a so-called law that has never been the law of Missouri during her entire legal career. The portion of the Missouri law that was ruled unconstitutional says that a police officer is justified in the use of such physical force as he or she reasonably believes is immediately necessary to effect the arrest or prevent the escape from custody. That was ruled unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court in 1985. It was legal to shoot and kill fleeing suspects in most states until the Supreme Court made it illegal in 1985, and everyone in law enforcement knows that. Everyone except the two assistant presenting the evidence to the grand jury in one of the most important cases of police use of deadly force in this country since 1985. There is nothing more helpful the assistant district attorney could have done for Officer Darren Wilson right before his testimony than show that incorrect, outdated, unconstitutional law to the grand jury. The grand jury then listened to Officer Wilson's testimony with the belief that anything he did to Michael Brown would be fully justified legally simply because Michael Brown at some point ran away from Officer Wilson. There was a time when that's all you had to do in America to be legally shot and killed by a police officer, just run away from the officer. In those days, American police were summarily executing people in the streets for suspicion of crimes that, if they were convicted for, they would not have gotten the death penalty, and in many cases not even gone to jail. Kids jumping out of stolen cars and running away from cops could be legally shot in the back and killed in those days for a crime that obviously did not carry the death penalty. There was actually one case of a man who spit on a police officer and then ran away from the police officer and was legally shot and killed by the police officer. Spitting on a police officer was a crime in that state, but it did not carry the death penalty unless you ran away from the officer. The district attorney's office allowed the grand jurors to travel back in time to the good old days of American law enforcement when the cops could shoot people for running away. Before Darren Wilson was born, that's how far back in time they went. The assistant district attorneys did that by using the old unconstitutional law as the window through which these grand jurors would evaluate Darren Wilson's conduct. The grand jury listened to the officer's testimony, believing that according to the law, Michael Brown did not have to pose any kind of threat to Officer Wilson to justify Officer Wilson shooting him dead. Weeks after Officer Wilson testified, several weeks after that, just as the grand jury was about to consider what charges they might vote for, the assistant district attorney, Kathy Elizadeh, knew that she had better amend the record of these proceedings by introducing to the grand jury the real law, the accurate law on police use of deadly force in Missouri. And so she told the grand jury, previously, in the very beginning of this process, I printed out a statute for you that was the statute in Missouri for the use of force to effect an arrest. So if you all want to get those out, what we have discovered, and we have been going along with this, doing our research, is that the statute in the state of Missouri does not comply with the case law. This doesn't sound probably unfamiliar to you, that the law is codified in a written form in books, and they're called statutes, but courts interpret those statutes, and so the statute for the use of force to effect an arrest in the state of Missouri does not comply with the United States Supreme Court cases. So the statute I gave you, if you want to fold that in half, just so that, you know, don't necessarily rely on that, because there is a portion of that that doesn't comply with the law. She then handed out to the grand jury a new document explaining the law on police officers' use of force, and then said, that does correctly state what the law is on when an officer can use force and when he can use deadly force in effecting an arrest, okay? I don't want you to get confused, and don't rely on that copy or that print out of the statute that I've given you a long time ago. It is not entirely incorrect or inaccurate, but there is something in it that's not correct. Ignore it totally. A grand juror then asked, the Supreme Court, federal court, overrides Missouri statutes? Now, we all learned the answer to that in high school. It is one word, yes. That is why we no longer have segregated schools in this country. The Supreme Court said it was unconstitutional and illegal to have segregated schools, and that is the only reason states like Mississippi and Alabama and Arkansas and, yes, Missouri no longer have segregated schools. But the assistant district attorney, when asked the simplest question she could possibly be asked by a grand juror, does the Supreme Court override Missouri statutes, couldn't bring herself to say a simple, truthful yes. Instead, she actually said, quote, "Just don't worry about that." Her full reply, word for word, was, "As far as you need to know, just don't worry about that." The other assistant district attorney in the room added, "We don't want to get into a law class." America already had a law class on this when Alabama Governor George Wallace stood in the doorway to prevent the first black students from attending class at the University of Alabama because the United States Supreme Court had ruled states' segregation laws to be unconstitutional. The federal government crushed the little, powerless, angry governor of Alabama when he needed to be crushed in that doorway by the righteous power of the United States Supreme Court and the federal government. It doesn't take a law class to explain to a grand juror that, yes, the United States Supreme Court does indeed override Missouri statutes. It takes one word. Yes, but that is not the worst, most unprofessional aspect of Assistant District Attorney Kathy Elizadeh's presentation to the grand jury about this law. The very worst part of it is that she never, ever explained to the grand jury what was incorrect about the unconstitutional statute that she had given them and left with them as one of their official papers for weeks and weeks and weeks. You will not find another legal proceeding in which jurors and grand jurors are simply handed a law and then weeks later handed a correction to that law, and then the grand jurors are simply left to figure out the difference in the laws by themselves. That is actually something you would do in a law class. Figure it out by yourself. With prosecutors like this, Darren Wilson never really needed a defense lawyer.
So, what did you think of that?
Well, that's just shameful.
I listened to that a couple of times before the show, and I said to myself, with that kind of information, anything that the grand jury did should be thrown out. And all of it should be nullified, null and void. You and I both know that's never going to happen.
Right.
But I thought, my God, that's so significant. And why is only this one guy on MSNBC talking about it and nobody else is saying anything about it? This was the rewrite segment on MSNBC Lawrence actually doing the commentation there. So I was shocked and I said to myself, none of that grand jury should even be, it shouldn't be taken
into
account.
Yeah,
no,
based
it's not
on
valid.
Incorrect information. Wow.
And
and
we never heard any of that from the actual jurors themselves either. So, and did they think that was standard operating procedure is my question. You know, if they're not familiar with what's going on in a courtroom, they might have thought that was standard operating procedure. I'm kind of surprised by that. I've looked over some of the different things about what's been going on, especially with the shutdown Black Friday today.
Yes.
Have you been following a policy? I know I have, where I don't do any shopping on Black Friday. I haven't done that for years.
Yeah.
Have you been doing the same?
I've never been a Black Friday shopper. If I do go anywhere, it would be somewhere a local business. We don't shop at the big corporations like Walmart. We boycott those all the time. You know, I don't get the hype. I think it's ridiculous. People, you know, can camp out to buy a TV, but we got arrested for being, you know, or kicked out of our public park for being there. It's priorities gone wrong. It's with America, you know, it's what, you know, the mainstream media is telling them, and it's what they do. So.
And what do you do for the holidays or for Christmas or solstice? What do you? I know we also have not exchanged gifts for many years. We just don't do that anymore either. So we have a family meal.
We celebrate. It's, you know, it's a tradition. We celebrate. We usually celebrate solstice. And you know, we do. My son likes to make a lot of handmade things. I like to, you know, buy local things for gifts, you know, whenever possible. We try not to dig into the over commercialism of it. It's just, you know, it's silly. It's silly to spend too much and so much and just, you know, you're just whining, especially if you're shopping at the big stores. You're not helping anybody out, but they're CEOs.
Yeah, we do solstice and we do a nice meal at home. And normally, I usually don't want to go a million different places. I prefer to stay home during that whole week. Really, I prefer to stay home and just stay close to home and cook meals at home. And it's our own tradition to just stay close to home and enjoy the holiday instead of thinking about everything that has to be done or people that have to be seen. It should be a restful, peaceful time, and that's kind of how I look at it anyway. But I love this time of year. Don't get me wrong, I really love the time of year. But as you know and I know, Christmas isn't really Christmas. I mean, I've always believed solstice. The Christmas tradition took a lot from the solstice traditions of the old days and stole a lot of those traditions, stole them. So, anyway, we're getting ready to close the show. I want to thank you for being on for the whole hour with me, almost the whole hour. Can you give us any parting thoughts on OcuStock and tell us, as you know, just review where they can find it. People can find it online. And
sure.
Yeah.
So our Facebook page is OcuStock. It's OcuStock. We have a website that will be up soon. The music and social awareness festival. It's all local. All the vending is artist and artisan goods. Workshops on sustainability, talking about keeping everything local and in the community and feeding people, and that's what it's about. And it's in May of next year in Southern Indiana.
And anybody anywhere can, you know, form one of their own and for their own local area, or you can travel and go to the one that's going to be in Indiana. And how can people find you on Facebook, Katie?
It's facebook.com/OcuStock.
Mm-hmm. And this is Katie Brown, who's one of the organizers.
Brown.
You're one of the four organizers. So,
well, there's a bigger group of us now, but I'm the last one left from the original group. So, but we've got a really, really good crew of volunteers this year helping out that I'm very thankful for. We've got a great team.
And the dates for this event are May 15th through 17th, 2015. So,
yes.
So with that, I'll take us out. I opened us up with Tedeschi Trucks Band, and the song was Talking At Me. This is going to be the same old blues. I want to remind people to catch us next week, same time, same place, 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. You can find more information out about us at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com or Wise Women Media, our group and our Facebook page, and we're tweeting at Wise Women Media. If you are, you know, would like to be considered as a guest for a future show, or you know somebody who should be on our show, just drop me a line on Facebook or hit us up on our pages or on Twitter. So we're going to take it out with Tedeschi Trucks Band, Same Old Blues. And Katie, thank you very much. You have a great night.
Thank you, Anita. You too.